Shirley MacLaine plays a sweet, precious angel, and literally everyone else plays a raging asshole in Some Came Running, a Midwestern slog that was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier. I'm here with two sunflowers judging the situation. It's Robin Hitchcock.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
What? I now recall. Okay. Spooky, spooky.
And Camila Adams.
Boo.
Hi.
If you were missing us, blame, what do the kids say these days? Lady Rona.
I didn't know the kids say that.
I've heard Lady Rona.
Actually, the funny thing is, I messaged them the day before we went to record. I was like, I am too busy to record this week.
Right.
I have too much to get done. And then an hour after we would have recorded, I tested positive for COVID. Baby's first COVID.
Oh,
that was number one.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
I hated it.
Yeah, it's stupid. I don't like it at all.
Fate was punishing you for your self-care. Like, right? you accurately, you Sean, did the thing that we're all trying to do and is just advocate for ourselves and not make up a fake illness. Just say, I do not have time to do this thing today. And the powers that be were like, well, now we will give you, we will retcon an excuse for you.
I started therapy this morning with like, don't you dare tell me that this is God's way of telling me I need to take a break. And she was like, well, I was thinking it.
Did you have what I had where suddenly you have neither the need nor the ability to like focus and do practical things because of the COVID? And yet you can't.
It's racing thoughts.
Yeah, like you can't. I was like, oh, I'll probably watch 18 movies this week. And you kind of can't because you don't have the focus
when we
ability.
Get to, you can't handle the truth. They'll be like, I did watch this.
These were on in my presence.
Correct. It sucked.
Yeah, it's bad. It's a bad disease. Don't get it, anyone. Paradoxically, live your life, so you can't help it. So it's a whole thing. And that's all we're going to say about that.
Yeah, we don't want me to start crying. So, although I will say, I think the COVID, the aftermath may have influenced my viewing of Some Came Running.
Oh, okay. We'll see about that.
We'll get there. While we're still talking about sunflowers for a second, I want to do our weekly segment. Shout out to Devin Marshall.
Mm-hmm. Devin, gotcha.
Who you know from Arcade. They mentioned how you said in the podcast, like, the only people who know this movie are people who got dropped off at the movie theater. And they were like, that was literally me.
The messengers.
Yes.
Aw, precious, precious baby.
Glad we baby could, angel.
Glad we could bring that memory back for you. Camila, did I say your name?
I think so.
This is Camila Adams.
Perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, that was the messengers. They tried, and yet a very dismal 30 out of 100 for us. Same as John Carpenter's Vampires. Those are.
I feel like John Carpenter's Vampires was more entertaining.
It was certainly more interesting.
More unpleasant.
But more unpleasant.
I'd watched The Messengers twice before I watched. I don't know.
Laura Palmer's in Vampires. That's all I need. So, wild swing from there to Some Came Running. I had never seen this. I had never heard of it. I realized while watching it, I probably have never seen a Frank Sinatra movie or a Dean Martin movie.
You mentioned that last week, which I
got nothing.
You got to watch Manchurian Candidate.
That's what I hear.
And I also think From Here to Eternity is worth watching. Although now I'm like mad at this guy.
Yeah. I've never heard of this movie. I keep wanting to call it Some Like It Hot.
That's a very good movie.
Which like same ish year, right? So
I think so.
Yeah, they were
a couple years later.
They were into what does this title mean?
I don't know. And I've never seen a Frank Sinatra movie. I think I may have seen a Dean Martin movie. It's odd because there was like a time period I was really into the Rat Pack.
Mm. Yeah,
and I still am not into them.
Yeah.
So but it was more musical.
Seen Ocean's 11.
Okay, I was wrong. Yeah, I did see the original Ocean's 11.
I definitely saw Ocean's 11. Like I saw Ocean's 11 before our generation, Social Eleven came out. Like, it was one of those movies that, like, was on Turner Classic Movies or AMC back when they showed movies a lot. Obviously, I saw The Manchurian Candidate. Other than that, I didn't see From Here to Eternity until after I started my Oscars quest, so within the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, there's Oscar-y people in this.
Yes. I feel like I had heard of this in the form of it being in my Oscar spreadsheet somewhere.
I had heard of this in that ever since TCM HD was added to my cable package, every few days I like look through and see if there's anything I want to tape. Like an old man, I'm going to tape my programs.
I used to literally every week, the little TV guide that came in the Star Ledger that had a movie index in the back, and I would read the entire thing, see what I haven't seen and was interested in, and set up my VCR. That was like Sunday evening.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I have a lot of bootleg VHS tapes still with like three movies on, set it to the super long recorder.
Yep.
And before we drew this, I saw some came running on that lineup, looked at it and thought, I'm not going to tape that, and moved on. So then I knew it was
$5
coming.
$5 later.
I got it in time. But that was the first time it entered my mind. And
also,
we drew
because
it.
This
Thank
movie
you,
is old
Tony?
And no one cares about it, it was only $3.
That's right.
Yes. Oh.
But it's also, I've been noticing, I don't know if you guys have been noticing, but I feel like every time we do a movie that is not streaming on anywhere, then like 2 months later,
immediately.
It's, right. It's like there, just free
it's
for
Tony
all.
It's Tony fucking with us.
He's keeping us relevant so that when those movies come out, we are at the top of a search. No, we're not. Anyway, assuming that like us, you have not seen this movie, I'm going to tell you what happens in it with probably too much editorializing. Tell me when.
Go.
Dave, a veteran and asshole, wakes up on a bus to his hometown of Parkland, Indiana. In Chicago, he got drunk and was placed unconscious on the bus, followed by sweet baby angel Ginny, who is in love with him and running from her asshole boyfriend. Dave, who is a published writer, but an asshole about it, meets up with his asshole brother Frank, Frank's asshole wife Agnes, not interesting enough to be an asshole, Professor French, and the professor's daughter, semi-asshole Gwen. Dave falls in love with Gwen, who rejects him for being an asshole, but not before going back and forth on it for a while because she's a semi-asshole. Dave shacks up with an asshole gambler, Bama, who is dying and being an asshole about it. When it becomes clear that Gwen isn't going to marry him, Frank settles for poor, sweet, innocent angel baby Ginny, and they get married in front of paid witnesses because Dave is an asshole and no one supports the union. Ginny's asshole ex turns up to kill Dave, but poor, sweet, kind, heart of gold angel darling Ginny dives in front of the bullet and is killed. All the assholes survive. It is unclear who came running or where they were going.
Yeah, just under. Yeah, that's a lot. For me to really walk away from this movie just kind of like, meh. I lost interest like about an hour and a half in.
It feels so long.
Yeah.
It feels so long.
It's because for that first hour and a half, it is not at all clear what this movie is about.
Colin kept asking me, he was like, who are we supposed to be rooting for? And I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I guess for Shirley MacLaine to get out of this situation, but she also disappears for like 50 minutes.
For a while, it's just about Bama and how he's dying of drinking too much.
Which, he's one of the characters I don't hate.
Is that
Dean Martin?
Okay.
Yeah. First of all, Bama is a very cool name.
Yes.
Right.
Like, and also a great name for this, you know,
right,
ne'er-do-well character.
I enjoyed the character. And I really enjoyed watching Frank and Dean.
Mm. Sure.
And
you can tell they actually like each other,
right,
which is fun.
And it's like, you know, they got these little gentle sprinkles of comedy throughout.
Yeah.
And I liked Agnes. Like, I was here for Agnes.
Which one is Agnes's brother's wife?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you were like, she's an asshole, I was like, but she's one of the assholes who's right.
Right.
Oh, yeah. She's a dick about it, but her argument is keep your asshole brother away from her, which is totally legit.
And he does. Oh, my God. I hate him so much. And
he's so awful.
I guess you need to get into the facts, but I assume this is an author insert character, and therefore this, whatever this guy's name is, something James Jones or something completely boring, is my enemy now.
It is James Jones.
There
Good
you go.
Job.
Yes.
This was released December 18th, 1958. It did not go straight to number one. That week, South Seas Adventure was the number one movie in America, followed by The Buccaneer the following week.
Was the first one also? Were those both pirate movies?
We're watching this when we could have been having boat fun.
This is bookended by pirate films.
Infuriating. Once again, this is so early that we don't have specific numbers, but it is credited as a one-week number one movie in America the week of January 28th, 1959. The 2 weeks before and the 2 weeks after were won by Anti-Mame. It earned about $4.2 million. It is probably the ninth top-grossing film of 1958. But it was very expensive to make. That was not enough to turn a profit.
It was the top grossing film of 1958?
No, the ninth top grossing.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, COVID brain.
No, that's fine.
I was like, what? What were people doing?
Still top 10. I'm still surprised that it's one of the top 10 movies of the year. The book is by James Jones.
Asshole.
He wrote a number of novels. They're mostly about his time in World War II. His previous book was From Here to Eternity,
He wrote it. It was a huge hit. They made a huge hit movie out of it. Mm-hmm. And he became convinced that he was the most important man who had ever lived.
Yes, that seems true.
Yes.
As you said, the book was big. The movie was big. The movie also starred Sinatra. It was the number two.
Won an Oscar for it.
Sinatra won an Oscar for this?
No,
From Here to Eternity. That was the number two movie of 1953. One of the top 10 movies of the 50s.
Right.
So MGM bought the rights to the next book.
Not sight even unseen. Yeah.
Completely blind. And then it turned out to be a 1,200-page ramble that got bad reviews. The book is 1,200 pages long. Critics did not like it. And MGM was like, well.
I am joining Moms for Liberty with the sole purpose of burning every copy of this book.
And you know, there's probably, like, every underfunded library in America has a dusty old copy.
I'm going to go write a screenplay about a lady who has a vendetta against one 70-year-old book and subverts democracy for her personal needs.
Accidentally. That's a more interesting story. Critics did like this movie, particularly Sinatra's performance. But
really?
Yeah. And Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
Okay. Nominations for Expensive Baubles.
Was Shirley MacLaine nominated?
Yes.
Yeah. Valid. Which category?
Supporting.
Okay.
Oh, no. Best Actress.
Okay.
There's no way you're getting any of the Lost
Twos. Oh, I know this shit. Okay, hang on. I'm pretty sure it's Susan Hayward.
In?
I Want to Live.
Correct.
I've got a spreadsheet about this.
What's I Want to Live?
It's about a woman on death row. She wants to live. It's actually pretty good.
I believe it.
And then I'm going to guess Arthur Kennedy was nominated, the brother, because he was nominated for, like, 5 million things.
Yes.
Okay.
Supporting.
How many other ones am I trying to get?
What did he lose to?
58 Burl Ives in The Big Country.
Correct.
Also a movie I've seen because of my Oscars quest.
How's The Big
Country? Could not tell you one thing about it.
Is it a Western?
Yeah, sort of.
Okay. That is two of five.
Five
Oscar nominations.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, Minnelli won Best Director that year. So I don't think he was nominated twice. I think Soderbergh's the only person who's done that. It was nominated for Best Picture.
No.
Screenplay?
No.
Okay, thank God.
One more acting nomination.
Oh, what? Was it Agnes?
No.
Who?
The teacher?
Oh, or was it? Who did who play? Why is this hard to figure out? No, it was Gwen.
The teacher?
Martha Heyer. Yeah, the school teacher that he was in love with.
Oh, my God. Best supporting new person I'd like to fuck is my guess there.
Martha Heyer was nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
A drip.
Losing two.
Anybody?
Hang on. This one's going to take a second. Oh, that's the Separate Tables year. Wendy Hiller for Separate Tables. And that was the one where she was like, guys, what? She was like, I don't deserve this. This isn't a very good movie and I wasn't very good in it.
Oh my God.
But she was someone who like was owed an Oscar, one of those situations.
What's Separate Tables?
It's a movie. David Niven also won Best Actor for it. Huh. It's like one of those movies where there's a bunch of different people in the same place and they all have little things going on in their lives.
Mm.
You know? Yes, correct. They're all at separate tables.
I see. Yeah.
Yes.
That's. I like that.
It was fine. Yeah.
I enjoy those types of movies.
Correct. Yeah. David usually is really. I very much like that Oscar win for him. He's. Mm. It's one of those. I'm gonna say almost nothing, but show you a lot of feelings with my face. Mm. So I'm hugely in on that kind of performance.
Two other nominations were Best Costume Design.
What on God's green earth?
Just wearing normal ass suits.
Right. I guess
it's like Sinatra's army uniform.
Stupid, but that is good.
Ginny had some outfits.
Ginny had some outfits, and also Agnes had a couple of really baller 50s housewife dresses. Where like I like that look.
Yeah.
So okay, fine.
Lost to Gigi.
Also, I guess this is technically a period piece.
Oh, 10 years previous?
Yes.
He comes home from World War II.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, that also might have influenced that.
Also, I want to talk about, like, how old is Frank's character supposed to be? Because he's, like, 45 in this, and they refer to him as a kid. And I'm like,
know.
Was he ever young?
No, not really.
There was a song somewhere in this movie. It's called To Love and Be Loved. It was nominated for Best Original Song. Oh, it also lost to Gigi from Gigi. Quickly, this is the first movie to feature both Frank and Dean. This is Frank and Dean's movie together. First movie together. It was shot on location in Madison, Indiana. 24-hour security was required to keep adult women away from Sinatra. Several women broke through barricades and jumped on him during filming.
Listen.
So that's why it was the ninth highest grossing.
Yeah, right.
Him and Dean, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And book spoilers. In the book, Dave gets killed and Ginny lives. But, correct, but Sinatra suggested the change, saying, let her take the bullet instead. She'll probably get a nomination out of it, which was correct.
That's what I watched an interview on TCM, a very short clip of an interview with Shirley MacLaine saying that's what Frank told her. Yeah. Not about necessarily the bullet part, but like that's how he got her to take the role.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was like, you'll get an Oscar nomination for this.
Mm-hmm. He was right. Yeah. Listen,
her first nomination.
So fucking charming in this.
Yeah.
And like every point that I'm giving this movie goes to her, really. I guess Dean Martin was vaguely charming sometimes. And I mean, Arthur Kennedy, I think, was doing good acting. You know, really did seem the appropriate level of this is my brother and I love him. And also this guy fucking sucks. But I didn't care about him enough to really.
I don't know. Are we I lost interest really.
Right.
So I don't remember. Like, are we supposed to care about him necessarily?
They spend an awful lot of time on him. Like, he has this whole subplot with his secretary affair. Yeah.
That's right.
Arthur Kennedy, shout out to Carnegie Mellon's Arthur Kennedy.
Oh.
This was his fifth and final nomination.
I told you, he was nominated all over the place.
A pipeline that exists to this day because current CMU student Dominic Sessa is probably getting nominated for the holdovers.
Oh, good.
And left campus to go see his own movie at the Manor earlier this week.
That's so sweet.
We spend so much time on that brother, on Arthur Kennedy's character, and like the minutiae of his place in the community, and he's on the board of a bank, so it matters where.
I think it's just because to show how Frank is like fucking him up. It's just, and because like there's the, he's got strife with his wife because he's in town and he's like trying to kick it with him, and his daughter, he's like, his daughter's off doing whatever, but he's blaming Frank for whatever reason, and then he's got his little affair, and then he's like just buzzing around all over town trying to prove that he's a worthy person.
I think that's exactly the right verb. Yes, that's like what I guess this movie is about, and I don't care.
It's some come running around to prove who they are.
Is some came running like? Is that about the war that when war were declared?
I feel like we should be Googling this.
I'm going to Google it.
I'm like, we have the world's knowledge.
Is there some speech in the book that's like, some young men came running to defend Lady Liberty?
That sounds plausible.
Right? Yeah.
So what did Frank Sinatra came stumbling?
Jones.
Oh, I was going to say, it is a nice character detail that this guy wears his uniform everywhere because he can't be bothered to wear other clothes and also wants to get free meals.
Okay, according to a snippet that I found on Variety magazine, the title incidentally is taken from Saint Mark and is construed to mean that some have come running to find the meaning of life but are prevented from finding it by obsession with materialism.
Oh.
That's not what the movie's about.
Well, I mean, I was going to say that the one thing that really did interest me was I didn't know that they made this kind of movie back then, by which I mean, gosh, it's annoying being the wrong kind of rich. Like, I very much thought that that was either, like, Jane Austen period era or came about in the 80s. And that's right. That's my...
The Riche Nouveau.
Yeah, yes, correct. So that's my blinders, I guess. It made me think a lot about the 90s, honestly, like this period of, you know, a post-war prosperity, right? And it's like, and all those movies that came out in the 90s where it's like, oh no, I have a job and health insurance. I'm so empty, right? Like, this is that.
Yeah, it's more of a Magnolia than a than an old-timey romp.
Yeah, so I that was interesting, I guess.
I was most taken by how he was able to, how he was willing and able to give his $5,500 check to the hotel clerk.
Here's
to go
all of my money in the world. I looked it up on the inflation calculator. Of course, it's like 60 grand.
All right, that's what I was like, dude.
Yes, and he's like, go buy me some whiskey and deposit my life savings in my rival bank. Right. Right?
First of all, huh? How is that possible? But yeah.
I feel like even in 1958, the bellhop is like, this is beyond what we do for people at hotels.
Right.
I know that, like, you know, I said, will there be anything else? But I really meant a pillow. Like,
right.
Like, I'm on my way to get your ice. But I mean, can
he
we?
He truly is like, here's my agenda for the day. Take care of it.
It's like, did you walk into the wrong room? You forgot where you were.
Because he thinks he's the most important person on earth.
Also, I got secondhand drunk off of this movie. Like, just watching the whiskey fume. Because it's not, like, obviously the fact that they're all alcoholic is part of the movie.
Sort
but
of.
This soars even above that madman level of kind of casually there's always a drink around to, like, they're all just hard drinking 24 hours a day. And there's one moment where someone's like, it's 10 a.m. And Frank's like, I don't live by the clock. And other than that, there's and the fact that Bama is dying and doesn't care.
Right.
There's no reference to any of this.
Yeah.
Why this? Why movie? Why are you?
Okay, so 1958 is when it was made, and it was supposed to be in 48, is what we're saying. And he just come back from the war. I don't know what Bama's history. I don't remember what Bama's history is.
I don't think
is.
They get into it.
Yeah, he's a gambler. He's just a degenerate. That's just his life.
He is just a degenerate. Yes.
Yeah, and I also, maybe they're also trying to tie it into, because isn't there this stigma / you know, trope of writers being drunk? Just wasteful alcoholics all the time. Do we ever really get into his writing?
I'm going to guess it's long things about the war.
Well, he's got that pile of papers where he's like, here's my unfinished manuscript, and he gives it to the...
Grace? Gwen?
The lady who got an undeserved Oscar nomination.
Yeah.
And she's like, I fixed your book for you. Also, I'm in love with you.
Yeah. Like, the 50s were wild, man. Like, you just be like, spend like a total of 25 hours with somebody and just be like, yes, marry me.
And then, like, truthfully,
you only met so many people.
Like, I'm good for her is the one thing I will say, because, like, she could have, like, I like that she's got her head on her shoulders enough to be like, I am in love with you, but no.
Yeah. Right.
I've got one life to live and you're going to mess it up. Yes. So, good job, boring lady.
I also do appreciate, like, the it was getting like really uncomfortable there for a moment when he first meets her, and then she takes him home or whatever, and he's all handsy in the car, and she's like, "Listen, I really do have papers to grade. Where the fuck can I drop you?"
Yes,
I thought it was going to turn into something totally different, but luckily, no, it did not.
Just barely, though.
Oh, just barely.
I'm looking at my notes. They just devolve into me yelling at the movie. Like, the first few lines are observations, and then it goes, excuse you, pigs? Why are we here? Now you're messing her hair up? Fuck every character except Ginny. And then I stopped writing notes.
Yeah, I don't really have... I have, like, facts about Sinatra and Dean Martin that I looked
Please,
up.
Please, tell us about the Rat Pack. That's interesting.
One of the things I saw that really got me was that the Scooby-Doo... What does Scooby-Doo have to do with Frank Sinatra? Well, if you listen to Strangers in the Night, when he sings Doobie-Doo,
yeah,
animator Iwao Takamoto was so inspired by the song that he created the world-famous cartoon dog named Scooby-Doo.
Amazing.
Right?
Amazing.
What? I want to know steps 2 through 5. Step one, hear Stranger in the Night. And step two is going Doobie-Doo. What does that sound like?
Doobie-Doobie-Doo.
How did you get to the dog and the stoners and the mysteries and the...
I'm pretty sure there is a clear missing link.
What we did not mention was what Ikoi was smoking as he was listening to Doobie-Doo. It was another Doobie-Doo.
Exactly.
It sure was.
Another thing was that he did not rehearse for this movie. He refused to rehearse, and per that interview with Shirley MacLaine, it wasn't because, oh, I'm too good. It was one of those, if I don't put a bunch of effort into this and I'm not good at it, I can blame it on that instead of putting a bunch of effort into something and not being good at it and people seeing me fail.
That man thing.
Exactly. Sinatra was married a bunch. And we all know, like, the whole mafia being, but quite frankly, like, that Scooby-Doo thing, that was the one thing
that's
I found,
the most
like,
exciting
the most,
thing I've the heard about Frank Sinatra since I found out he was from New Jersey.
Right. And I always thought that Dean Martin, like, he was an alcoholic in real life, but I think there was a point where he had stopped drinking, and, like, because he was always, they called him the King of Cool, and he would always have a whiskey in his hand on stage and wherever you saw him. But I think at some point it became apple juice.
Oh.
And he just kept the persona. But the most exciting new fact that I learned about Dean Martin was that he was an avid comic book reader.
Oh, I like that for him.
He was a big comic geek. But he was so embarrassed about it that he would send Jerry Lewis to go buy the comics for him.
I really love Jerry Lewis being Dean Martin's gopher.
Yes.
He would go deposit his $5,500 check.
Exactly. But that's what was worth mentioning.
Thank you for that.
Has anyone seen any of the, like, Dean Martin, like, Road to Bali, Road to Hong Kong?
I don't
Martin
think so,
and
no.
Lewis?
I've seen some of their stage performances, stage acts, but I've never... I don't think I've watched any movies. I don't really enjoy Jerry Lewis.
We're all Americans.
No, these children aren't French. They're American.
It seems like that's the slight half-step evolution from Abbott and Costello. And as an Abbott and Costello devotee, I am curious. But
check one out one time.
Apparently not curious enough to watch it.
I would recommend Manchurian Candidate first.
Yeah, probably.
One of the things about this movie, the score in it is so literal.
Oh, very.
My first note was like, someone tell the score to calm down. He's walking around his hotel room and it's like, it's like, it's making a drink. It's right. You're fine.
But he is the most important man who ever lived.
But it's like when they're telling these stories, like he's talking, like the music gets all like melancholy and romantic when he's talking about, you know, his brother asks him, you got a lady or are you married or something? And then they start talking about the parade that immediately turns patriotic.
Yes.
And it's like, guys, we don't need it all the time.
What's From Here to Eternity about?
Pearl Harbor.
Oh, and like it happens?
Yeah.
In the all right, see? Action. An event occurs.
Like,
that's what this movie was missing. Something happening before. The ending sequence is fine. Like, the ending sequence at the carnival is dramatic. I love the way it's shot.
I was genuinely shocked that real action occurred.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, what? What kind of... What, we became a new movie. And then I was so annoyed at the poor Shirley MacLaine.
That's such a shame.
Tragic.
I do, like, she is a lovable character, as pathetic as she is.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, when she jumps in, I think it's in the trailer, when she jumps in his lap and says, love me!
Yeah.
I'm like, oh bless your heart.
Right.
The trailer, by the way.
Look forward to a new dramatic experience. based on the second controversial novel by the author of the sensational and memorable From Here to Eternity. This is Parkman, the setting for a bold panorama of adult emotions. And this is Dave Hirsch, who returned to shake loose the sins, the shame, the secrets of an entire town so that it would never be the same. His hometown hadn't changed much in its 100 years. Except for one thing, Dave was back. And everyone knew the trouble and women must be close behind. David! The most dramatic portrayal in Frank Sinatra's fabulous career. His best friend, Dean Martin. A guy who wouldn't take his hat off to anybody.
He always wears his hat in the presence of ladies?
All the time.
He even sleeps in his hat. I'll bet.
Men fought him, but couldn't whip him. Women loved him, but couldn't hold him.
Dave, be in love with me. Oh, I love you so much. I've never met anybody like you before in my whole life.
This is Ginny, who wanted his love regardless of consequences. A standout performance by Shirley MacLaine.
You'll miss the best.
Martha Heyer is Gwen, afraid to love him and too attracted by him not to.
No, we'll have no more of that. I'm not one of your barroom tarts.
You're right, teacher. You're 100% right. I've been a bad boy. I've been naughty. Matter of fact, I don't even belong in your class.
Yes, everyone knew that Dave was back. The smug folks of the country club set and the others on the wrong side of the tracks. Some Came Running reveals with startling force the innermost secrets of a town and its people, boldly played by a cast as big as its story.
How am I already bored? What is the what are you selling me, trailer?
Some of the most engaging personalities exactly, in Hollywood today.
Tell me what the movie's about. And then I watched the movie and I was like, oh, the movie doesn't know what the movie's about. How is the trailer going to figure it out?
Right. I love how they're like, Frank Sinatra's best friend, Dean Martin. Right.
Thanks, guys. So that's what we're just doing. I was like, you know, Matt Damon's best friend, Ben Affleck, joins him in Good Will Hunting.
That's literally what we're at in this trailer.
It's one of those trailers that like, aren't the movies great? That's what we have for you.
It is
Leave your
film.
House. See a motion picture.
Which I guess you didn't need much in 50.
No, right? They had air conditioning.
Right. Air conditioning. And it's like a lot of people didn't have TVs
in
their house.
I guess you said this was, what, December? So never mind.
You know, it crept across the country through 59 because that's what happened at the time. Our letterbox list is
it to somebody's letterbox list?
Just a copy paste of Martin Scorsese's 85 films you need to see to know anything about film. All right, Marty.
Boo.
What the fuck, Marty? You're gonna be mad at me for going to see Ant-Man, and you think this is one of the 85 movies I need to see?
I'm pretty sure this is a I saw this movie when I was 18 situation, and I thought it was brilliant. Like, you know, the way that I felt when I saw American Beauty, right? Like.
American Beauty probably holds up better than this, even with its lead.
I would love it if Martin would just shut the fuck up. Like, nobody cares.
Apparently,
put out a whole Netflix special of him just talking to what's her name.
Really, shut really care. Who's what's her name?
Wasn't that a whole thing? It's just Martin Scorsese talking to New York literati woman.
Yeah, what's her name?
Byline.
Yeah, no.
Fran Lebowitz. Lebowitz. Some people are so hung up on what this guy says.
I don't understand. I don't. It's just, it's 2023. Like, we all need to find a new fucking, you know, icon where film is concerned. You know, find something else. You know, come up with your own fucking agenda, your own ideas and concerns about who and what movies are. You know what? Who gives a fuck what Martin Scorsese has to say about what makes good cinema?
That's why we have Letterboxd. Yes. So everyone can make their list.
You should press the applause button on that one.
I don't know where it is. these buttons aren't labeled.
It's yellow. Hit yellow. Damn it. It was the other yellow. It was the other yellow.
This is going to go on forever.
Sounds are going to keep happening. That's still. Don't hit it again. It'll start over. Let it burn out. All okay. Right.
I do like how the canned laughter is just middling.
Right, yeah.
It's not like it's people not, crack it up. It's more like, oh, good job. Good job, podcaster.
Because, I mean, let's be honest.
Fair.
My number has been dropping ever since we started. We got to talking. I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say it, there's a few, like, filmmaking problems with it. It's just, I don't know, 38. I'll say 38. Camila?
35.
Mm-hmm. I'm also going to say 35, and I started lower, and then I remembered that I gave The Messengers a 30.
Right, yeah.
And I was like, well, this had Shirley MacLaine in it.
Right, we had Shirley, Dean, and Frank.
Yes.
And that was enough for a while.
But anyway. I hate these people, and I hated this movie.
No, I liked The Messengers better. 36. We landed on a 36. Don't come running. Just stay where you are, not watching this movie.
Leave but it alone.
The bingo card, though.
We got unrequited love.
Unrequited love, so absolutely.
All over the place.
We certainly have Funeral, and I'm pretty sure we have Hang Up a Coat.
I think so.
Early on.
Are bingos diagonal?
Yes. Yeah.
Bingo.
I have a bingo as well.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
All right.
Movie draft.
The question is when, because we're not going to do it today.
No. Nope.
And
next time,
next
Christmas.
Time we have to draw a holiday film.
Should we wait to crack open the new year with it?
Yeah, the final recording, first episode of the new
Sounds
year
good.
Will be the winner of a movie draft that, right. that wraps up our Christmas episode. That's right. There you go. So it's time for the other thing. You can't handle the truth. What do you want to? It's been 3 weeks.
I know. Did you watch the, what's the new David Fincher movie?
Mm-hmm. I didn't watch it yet. The Killer.
Okay. I made it 20 minutes in before I was like, okay, absolutely not.
Do you usually enjoy David Fincher
yes,
movies?
I do. That's
upsetting.
This movie seems like a student film from 1995.
That sucks.
On a fairly long list of movies this year that I did not get the hype about. I mean, it's not. I probably still gave it an 8 out of 10, maybe a 7 out of 10. The problem is, it's by David Fincher, and I'm going to need a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
It gets better.
I mean, when I opened up Letterboxd and saw people I respect giving it 3 and 4 stars, I was like, it must dramatically take a turn, because those first 20 minutes are roof.
Wow. He's just sitting around waiting.
Listening to the fucking Smiths.
Oh, that never goes away. He's
and
listening
I,
to the
as
Smiths.
As soon as I figured out that wasn't going away, I was like, I think I'm done. And then I told Colin, I was like, I've got 5 more minutes in me. And he's like, I'm done. And I'm like, great, me too.
The best I can say about it is it's a good, boring movie. But it's every assassin movie. Yeah. There's an assassin. Something goes wrong. He has to get out of the situation that goes wrong. That's not an interesting enough story for me to want David Fincher to get off the couch.
Right.
Why did you bother with this?
He has a contract with Netflix, I'm guessing.
Tilda Swinton's in it.
Just give me another fucking season of Mindhunter.
Yeah. Tilda Swinton's in it for 15 minutes. Those are the good 15 minutes.
All right.
But no, I'm not going to tell anybody they need to see it, certainly. Camila, you were pulling up your list when we got distracted.
I watched Friday the 13th, part 4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
I watched all the ones that were available on Max. You know what? My overall take about the Jason movies, not very good.
They're fine.
I think we did this last time.
Yeah.
We started it last time. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we just coincidentally, Robin and I were both on this train to watch all of them.
It wasn't that coincidental. It was spooky season.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I did Saw. Like, yeah. You both went to Jason.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, the whole thing's fine. Maybe I'll probably wait until next spooky season to finish the chronological.
You just go there for a hit of camp stuff.
Yeah, I do. I think I do enjoy them more than the Freddy movies, though.
I definitely enjoyed the Freddy movies.
I enjoy the Freddy movies more. But I bought a novelty bar of soap that looks like Jason underwater, like his mask looming up at you, and it smelled great. Kind of woodsy.
That's all right.
Yeah, what does Jason's rotting corpse smell like?
Like woods and smoke, you know.
Smoke,
you
know. And wieners mask. And teenage sex.
Mm-hmm.
I finally watched Audition.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get why I didn't like it. I don't understand why everybody was so...
Is this the movie where she...
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, that was probably like the most... Maybe it was just spoiled for me because so many of those lists, those shows that are like,
correct.
And this is the most horrific, terrifying scene from that film. And I saw it. And so I, like, had I not already known it was coming, maybe I would have been a little more. But for the most part.
It is more horrifying if you are a man. The whole point of that movie, having not seen it, but literally the whole point of that movie is, what if I were vulnerable?
Apparently I gave it 4.5. So the theory checks out.
Yes.
Theory checks out.
And I'm just like, I mean, don't be an ass. I don't know. I mean, this feels right. Like, I'm on her side.
Good for her.
Good for her.
Good for her.
I watched Five Nights at Freddy's. Talk about being disappointed.
Disappointed. Why did you have expectations for this, Camila? What's going on?
I think it was just because I'm really rooting for Matthew Lillard.
I liked his speech at the end. Yeah. I was like, okay, come on.
Right.
Let's get back to that.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just, but like, throughout, I'm like, I didn't know this video game existed. I feel like it's only good for people who have experienced this video game.
I have experienced my niece Davina explaining the plot of the video game to me at her Five Nights at Freddy's themed birthday party. And yikes. So I also have no interest in that movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't like
on
it.
On our list now.
Yes, it is.
Someone warned me.
Yeah, it is there.
The Haunting in Connecticut. I went back and watched that. I hadn't seen that. I don't think. I think I probably ignored it. It's from like 2009.
I remember the name.
And it's based on
a haunting that happened in Connecticut.
Exactly. Sure. And you know, Fred and Lorraine, or
those
Ed and Lorraine.
Them again.
They're not in the movie,
but it's their.
But
deal.
It's one of their. But it's one of the ones that are like. There's like this controversy around it because apparently it's supposed to be like a big hoax. Like they were like, yes, this is the true story. And then whoever wrote the script or whatever came to them and was like, all right, this is what happened. He's like, yeah, but you know, make some stuff up and make it spooky is what Ed said to the screenwriter or whoever, whatever. But it's got the little Kyle Gallner and Virginia Madsen. It's not bad. It's like, I don't know if it was because I was home alone and it was late at night and I had all the lights off in the house, but it did really spook me the fuck out.
And that makes a difference.
Right.
It really does.
And I think it's so much where I had to stop it after. I was like, you know, I'll come back tomorrow during the daylight hours and finish this. But I gave it 3 stars and a heart on Letterboxd, so it's not so bad. And I finally watched Spider-Man Across the Universe, or Across the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm. And
I'm so pissed about the to be continued.
Listen, like,
we got a lot of Spider-Verse to cross.
But do we is the thing, right? Like, they barely finished this one.
Right. I feel like we wasted a lot of time going into this. Where
they barely finished this one, and then the animators were like, I haven't slept in 8 months, right? Like,
if nothing, I mean, anything can happen. I'm voting in like 3 weeks. If nothing changes, number one best picture. Across the Spider-Verse.
I mean, it was
talk to me when it's an entire movie.
It was I enjoyed it, and it was, what's funny is like we saw the first one, we were super hyped about it, you know, and I don't know what took us so long to finally come and watch this, but for whatever reason this weekend Kaj got super into Spider-Man. It was like overnight. Boom. Just I'm like
excited for
happens to every child.
Just overnight. She's like Spider-Man this, Spider-Man that. And like we bought her a coloring book.
Does she love Spider-Gwen?
Well, here's the thing though. Like, she hadn't seen the movie. That's what I'm confused
this
about.
This happens to kids. They like see it on enough lunchboxes that they're like, I'm into it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And like one of her friends was Spider-Man for Halloween.
There you go.
But so, okay. So she's into this now. I'm like, all right, well, let's watch the second Spider-Verse film. And you know, she leaves after like a half an hour.
It's too chaotic for a small child.
Right. And then I'm just like, Dan and I are left in it. And she's like, I'm going upstairs. And we're like, uh-huh.
Yay.
So that's how we even got to watching it. Mm-hmm.
I will say, Colin told me as we were driving to the theater to see it, he's like, I have to spoil something for you. And I'm like, you know how I am about spoilers. And he's like, it's part one of two. And I was like, that is the one spoiler.
Turn around.
I'm like, thank you so much. And even before I saw how abrupt it is in the film, I was like, the whole time I was like, thank God I know.
Yeah.
And then it was so abrupt. And I was like, Colin, I love you.
Yeah, because that really would have helped me had I known. Because we were like in it.
Yeah.
And then it happened. And then it's just like, boop. All right, fuck you guys. I'm like, how dare you?
Yeah.
I'm just yelling.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it.
My feelings have been made clear. Many things, and I wish there was something that I was going to be like, you know what's great? I don't really have that about anything. I really disliked Priscilla.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm in the minority about that.
I'm thinking about going to see it today.
I wouldn't tell you not to. Okay. I don't think anyone is going nuts for it, but most people didn't hate it like I did. I think that what she's trying to do is show how...
Sophia Coppola,
yeah. The director, is show how, despite being married to Elvis,
yeah,
Priscilla had kind of a boring, like, tucked away life. Like, she was just kind of kept, right?
What about the Naked Gun movie, Sophia Coppola?
Not addressed in this film. And it's like, if you have a movie about Elvis Presley and Priscilla Presley, two very interesting people, and it's mostly about how things are quiet and boring, I'm out.
It's
like, my favorite moment in the movie is a couple little montages where it shows all the little things, all the little 50s things that are around. I'm like, the most interesting thing about an Elvis and Priscilla movie shouldn't be the decor. They're both fine. I don't think either one of them is great.
I don't enjoy Sofia Coppola as a director.
I do, but it's been a while since she had since she really put her bat on the ball.
I really liked The Beguiled.
It was good.
Yeah,
I was really mad about that.
I mean, it's a weird fucking movie.
Yeah,
but I liked it. And I only saw Marie Antoinette within the past couple of years, and that's one of those movies that a lot of people didn't like when it first came out and then eventually came around on it. Mm-hmm. So I saw it with the benefit of knowing people came around on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing where it's like, here's this incredibly important historical figure doing normal shit. Right? She's playing celebrity with Tom Hardy, right? Like, it's like, okay.
And the other thing to me is, this is executive produced by Priscilla Presley.
Right. Yeah. That's always a thing with these.
And based on her memoir.
Yeah.
So it can only be so critical,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Including acknowledging, but not really saying anything about them meeting when she's 13 and Elvis is 23.
Yeah. That pisses me off about a lot. Like, every time it's like, oh, it's this whirlwind fucking romance. Like, she was a child.
Yeah. And to me, that means, just don't make that movie.
Yeah.
Like, 13 is really young. I know the times are different. 13 is really fucking young, Elvis.
Yeah.
But that being said, I'm not judging Priscilla Presley,
right,
living legend, for having married Elvis Presley.
Right.
Understandable. Right. But I'm not making it into a movie either, right, for that reason.
I mean, you could also make it into a movie where you meaningfully grapple with that.
Right.
But
and that's
it sounds
not
like
happening
they did
here.
It because she's the executive producer and she didn't want to
like,
do that.
Let's not talk about
yes.
it.
Yes. Which, like, okay.
Rustin, about Bayard Rustin, made in Pittsburgh, starring Coleman Domingo, is a normal-ass Oscar bait biopic, but he's great in it.
Yeah.
If you want to watch it,
yeah,
he does enough of a good job to make you interested. Just
he's,
one
he
of them
is an
movies.
Interesting actor.
I like him.
I like watching him.
Next Goal Wins by Taika Waititi is surprisingly unfunny.
That's that movie that has been on the shelf for a while. Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah. It's about the American Samoan soccer team trying to win a game for the first time ever.
Cool Runnings.
Yeah. Kind of Cool Runnings. Listen, if you both want to leave and I'll talk about the Marvels for an hour and a half, I certainly will.
if you both want to leave.
Because no one actually cares, let alone the listener. The Marvels is pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's clearly a mess. Yes, you can tell that they like changed course 5 times and they couldn't decide. They couldn't settle on how much of the Marvel mythology was going into this one. And you could feel that. And that hurts the first act. Mm. And then after that, 3 characters I love team up and fight a bad guy in cool Marvel locations.
Yeah.
So great. So fine.
Is it? Does it hurt to not have seen Ms. Marvel, the show?
I would watch Ms. Marvel because she's great. The show's pretty good. The show's kind of general, but Iman Vellani is great, and that character is really great.
Yeah, we watched the first 2 episodes, but not for any particular reason.
Right.
Yeah. We just forgot about it or whatever.
I think maybe it was on in my presence, but I also might be confusing it with another one of the Marvel shows.
No, for really no reason, I watched both Ms. Marvel and Secret Invasion in the week leading up to seeing the Marvels, and Secret Invasion didn't play in at all, other than to explain Nick Fury, not in a great mood right now. right now. And Miss Marvel and Miss Marvel is just like, yeah, she has a magic bangle that gives her light powers. Like, that's you're fine. It is far from the best Marvel movie. It's far from the worst Marvel movie. I just hate that it's become, you know, a referendum on whether or not Marvel's doing good or bad, or should we do this or should we do that.
Marvel's clearly doing bad. Like, I don't know where they are money-wise. They are very unhappy. There's really bad press right now.
Yeah.
This is their biggest profile thing that's out right now. I agree with you on the merits. And again, it's also this other thing of like, well, that's what you get when you make a movie about women.
I know.
Right? And it's like, or let a woman direct a movie, you idiots, right? So like, I don't like that. But also like, yeah, no, Marvel isn't a bad place.
But it's also like, there was no, because of the strike, they were not, all the celebrities and everybody involved in the film were not allowed to do a press tour, press junkets and whatnot. And, so as far as for this not having any sort of like, I was in this movie endorsement.
And the movie is on the, like the whole, the reason people like the movie who do like it is that it's three very charming women.
Yeah. Right.
So you couldn't have those charming actresses charm people on Jimmy Kimmel. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, I mean, I guess in, when you put look at it that way, they did great.
Yes.
the opening
numbers.
Yes.
There is clearly a shift that needs to happen behind the scenes at Marvel. Mm. And that can be true, while also it's not like, look, this movie has a muddy first act and only made $50 million, so it's proof. It's like, just watch the fucking movie or don't. We don't need to talk. It's pretty fun.
But what does Martin Scorsese think?
Cat stuff? The best Cat stuff. You have to see it specifically.
I'm going to see it at some point.
Cat stuff. I feel like I had something else to say, but I just got demoralized. And
I have something really important to say, which has been almost 3 weeks denied. Hello Mary Lou Prom Night 2.
I think we talked about this on the last one.
No, I think we just texted, or it was in the
we texted,
group chat.
Right, because I'm pretty sure I watched it the night we last recorded, and Sean was right. And then I did a Sean was right film festival.
Thank you.
What else? We watched It Follows, which I had never seen. Mm-hmm. I forgot to bring you back your Blu-ray. And
that's where that is.
Great fucking movie.
Is it?
It's very hard. Have you not seen it?
I tried to watch it, fell asleep, and never went back.
Okay. Yeah. You have to
In my queue to like come back to.
Right. And it's one of those movies you have to actually watch. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. No. Keep your phone. Put your phone away.
Yes. which is harder to do as a parent and stuff. So yeah. But really, really good. I very much got wrapped up in like, well, couldn't you just fly to Cape Town? Right. You know, the way that you
does
do.
Does it transport at a certain distance? Does it blip towards you?
My biggest question was, do you have to have an orgasm? That was my biggest question.
So
I wish they had gotten in on that, because that would have been a great plot point where she's like,
right,
I gotta have sex with this guy because I know he can do it. Can't take a risk on some rando.
This is one of those cases like you with Mother, where I'm like, I'm pretty sure my interpretation is wrong, but I like it better,
yes,
so
correct.
I'm sticking with it.
My interpretation of Mother is correct.
So it's supposed to be about, like, quietly about STDs.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, it's about how as soon as you become an adult, you're aware that now you are marching towards death.
Oh, yeah.
And the often, for a lot of people, the dividing line between childhood and adulthood is having sex.
Yeah.
So it's...
I think that your interpretation makes sense. Anyway, great movie.
And the sequel coming, They Follow, is in pre-production.
I can't tell you how many times I put on this guy's other movie, speaking of On the Shelf Forever, Under the Silver Lake. I keep putting it on and losing interest.
I've been told I need to see it.
You'll like it, probably.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that has Sean will like this vibes. Yeah. Okay, I also, I watched They Shoot Horses, Don't They, for part of my Oscars quest, and it... changed my life. So, I mean, for those who don't know, this is a movie about the dance marathons that happened during the Great Depression.
Oh.
And
it's not about horses?
No. When I put on the movie, Colin was like, what is this about? And I'm like, I don't really know. Something about the Great Depression. He's like, weird title. And I'm like, yeah, well, you know how you shoot a horse if it breaks its leg? I'm like, it's that, but for people. And he's like, I don't think you should watch this right now. And I was like, okay, I'll watch something else. And then a couple days later, he was asleep and I watched it. And I was like, I shouldn't be watching this right now. And yet, my heart, I love the cinema.
Heartbreak feels good in a place like this.
Great fucking movie. What can I say? And it's also one of those movies that's like uploaded on YouTube in full. So, because it's like out of print. So anyone can go watch it. So, and it, there won't even be advertisements. Similarly, also for my Oscars quest, I watched Melvin and Howard. It's fine. Newer movies I saw, Haunting in Venice. Definitely going to file that under I had COVID. Allegedly, I've watched it. I like these movies even though they're bad. I guess it's kind of my overall thing about the Poirot Brenna movies. Yeah.
I've seen it twice now because I took Mary Beth. Like it was just at the right time when we had a movie to go to. And it's nice and it has a good cast and it's spooky enough. And it's like 90 minutes long. Yeah. And like I remember I hadn't checked. It was one of those times when I didn't know how long the movie was when I was going into it. And it's like 80 minutes and he starts making his I know who did it face. Yeah. And I'm like, already? It's like an hour 15. You're already on the speech.
This is the same universe as the Orient Express or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I don't know, maybe I'll watch the second one, but like the first one I did not watch it. It took me too long to watch it. Then I watched the Armie Hammer documentary and I was like, I can't do this.
The second one is by far the worst. And I would say that this one is probably the most objectively good one. Like it's well directed, but these movies aren't good. And yet I kind of want one to come out every year. That's kind of how I feel.
That's how I feel about the Daniel Craig ones.
Well, that's the thing is that what I really want is one of those every year. Yeah. But I realize
I'll take Kenneth.
I don't actually want Rian Johnson to only make Knives Out movies for the rest of his life. I am totally cool with Kenneth Branagh only making Poirot movies for the rest of his life. And I never have to watch a Belfast again. Into it. Into it. And then the other one I watched was No Hard Feelings.
Yeah.
Which, fine. A very charming child in that movie. The boy. Very charming. I hope he does more. And it very much felt like an 80s movie, which is fun. It has kind of inevitable third act problems.
Yeah.
I think that before the inevitably not great ending, I was like in 4-star territory. Mm-hmm. And then the last 20 minutes or so, it's like, yeah, okay, back to reality. And I don't care anymore.
That's funny. Yeah, I started to watch that, but then I remembered that something else was on Netflix. Yes.
I mean, it didn't really take like we wanted it to, but thanks for the adult comedies, Hollywood. You tried.
But also, it's not that like really they're just like, let's have a full frontal nudity fight. That was very clearly them being like, it's an R-rated comedy, folks.
Language. You couldn't have all that.
Yeah, okay. But like that to me felt pandering.
The other one was more R-rated. The trip one, the trip to China one.
Joyride, which I haven't seen yet.
I still haven't seen that.
Yeah.
I found out that was a watered down title. That was supposed to be called the Joy Fuck Club. And they were like, we probably can't.
Did they say that joke in the movie at least?
No.
Oh, God damn it. What a waste. Maybe they like asked Amy Tan and she was like, nah. And they were like, okay, whatever you want.
Robin, have you watched these documentary series about the Twin Flames?
Of course I have. I was just going to say, I'm like, do we have time
about
to talk
about
the Twin Flames universe?
I had a really bad week. And when somebody was like, there's a new cult doc on Netflix, I was like, this is a personal gift to me.
There are two of them.
Like, there's two of them.
There's one on Netflix and I think the other one's on Hulu.
I will be watching it.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It's so weird. These people who like have promised to help you find your true love.
They are
your twin
so
flame.
Transparently, they are the people who sat down and said, let's start a cult.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like they're so obviously that is their goal.
If you look deep enough, there is absolutely charts in their house where they from their first meeting to do this thing.
And it takes a turn.
It takes a terrible turn. Basically, you know, it starts off, quote unquote, innocent enough, where they're charging a bunch of people money to, like, take these classes so they can open themselves to, you know, finding their true love. But then it eventually turns into this whole thing as to where they're, like, convincing people to transition genders.
Oh.
People that have been no point in their lives prior to this been like, you know what, I think I'm really a guy.
There's a lot of people I want to not see this movie. This feels like it's going to be used.
Exactly that. And it is so clear. So it's Cecilia Peck of the Pecks who directed it. She also directed the Stars Nexium docuseries.
Okay.
And it's very clear that she was like, I could really fuck up here. Yeah. And so, like, yeah, they get a trans commentator to be like, here is why this is more harmful to trans people. Than
also somebody, a professor in, like, some sort of, like, transgender study.
Yes.
And there was also, like, an actual transgender woman who was part of the cult.
Oh, that's second. Right.
Yeah.
Right. There were a couple people who are legit trans who are like, these other people aren't.
Right, yeah.
Yes, that professor is also trans. They tried so hard, and yet it really, like you said, it's one of those things where you're watching it, you're like, oh God, please don't let other people know.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody tell Twitter about this.
I will be watching the other one.
Yeah,
It is so, that these two people, they are so transparent.
Yeah.
It's fucking hilarious.
And what's great is, like, the other one,
in the worst way,
it follows other people. Like, the transgender woman is also, that's the only common person that speaks in both of them.
It's like the most important person to
talk. Right, yeah, right. But yeah, so.
I'm glad you watched that.
You know what's great is The Night Strangler, the second Kolchak movie.
I really liked that TV series when I was a kid.
Who knew that Darren McGavin, the dad from Christmas Story, is the most entertaining man on the face of the earth?
He will always be Kolchak the Night Stalker to me.
I know. Yeah, like, this is my introduction, and I think I have to go deeper.
Yeah.
Let's draw a movie.
Let's go.
Flying blind.
No veto, no man's land.
Next, and this is going to be it for a while, because next time we draw a movie, it will be a holiday movie. And after that, we'll have a movie draft. So this is...
Make it good, Tony.
You know, this is really the last... It's the last random one of 23. Okay. I mean...
I don't like that.
Yeah, I know.
No, there's a chance this is my number one movie of the year. I'm just not dying to go... Like, Barbie? I need to... of the year 2013.
Oh, it's
like... But once you've seen Gravity, you've kind of seen Gravity. I mean... Sad Space.
I have not seen Gravity.
Well, then we'll be eager. That was either my number one movie that year or was very, very close.
Sean,
I think it's
great. I would be shocked if that weren't your number one movie of that year. I guess it is a Sad Space woman.
Sean Coyne.
But they give her a boy name, so you know she's serious.
Dr. Ryan.
Yes. So.
I don't know if I have a top 20 of 20.
That's one of my hugest fiction pet peeves. Is we gave the girl character a boy's name, so you know she's important.
Does Ripley count?
Her name's Ellen.
Okay.
Next bingo card.
Yes.
Bingo card squares.
Did you like it at the time?
I really... That was one of the first years I did the death race, and this was when I was living in Cape Town.
Uh-huh.
And so I didn't have a lot of options for when it came to see things, right? And I was so afraid of seeing this movie, like, because it's genuinely horrifying. I kept being like, Colin, today is the day, we're going to go. And he's like, I don't want you to emotionally. And they're very much like, they shoot horses, don't they? And then finally I streamed it illegally somewhere. Mm-hmm. And like from the comfort of my home. And yes, it is very good. I hate it. And I'm sad I have to watch it again.
Well. Let's see what happens.
And then
no vetoes. 50%
of the episode's going to be expensive baubles.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It did very, very well. We'll go into the archives. This we were doing You Can't Handle the Truth by this point. And I think Aaron hated it. I think Aaron, you know, dismissed it as an hour and a half of a woman breathing frantically
into the camera. I mean, that is what it is.
But it was, I liked it. It's also... when I started voting for the Critics' Choice Awards. That was my first Critics' Choice Award campaign, so I remember it fondly. We'll find out. Is it streaming anywhere?
Nope, not for free. I'm looking at the Carnegie Library.
I was just going to say, I'm like, this seems like one I can probably find a cheap DVD of somewhere. I will say, and let's see if I still feel this way next week, or when we record, I remember at the time, like, having my fingers crossed that Sandra Bullock would sneakily win another Best Actress for this, because I hated Blue Jasmine so much.
Well, you were just a little ahead of the curve on being done with...
It's not just that. I mean, like...
I remember liking Blue Jasmine at the time.
It is a deeply difficult movie to watch when you've recently been diagnosed bipolar.
Oh, that would do it.
Yes.
We're just chatting now.
Yeah.
We're just having a nice chat. You know what's good about the Marvels? No, I'll shut up. Some came running. I don't know if I said the date it went to number one. It was in late January, January 28th of 1959. As if that centers your your memory of the charts.
Let me place myself.
What was the number one song in America? January 28th.
It's Elvis.
Doobie Brothers.
It is neither. Doobie Brothers. You're 15 to 20 years early.
She's thinking of different brothers.
You're thinking of the Everly Brothers. Doobie. Yeah. I put on the Doobie, like the first Doobie Brothers greatest hits album. Oh, man. You put that on when you've got an hour drive somewhere. You're just going to be feeling great.
You feel like you're on a yacht instead.
Yes, exactly. No, it is certainly not the Doobie Brothers. It is also neither the Everly Brothers nor Elvis.
Nor Elvis.
This is going to be somebody we have heard of or a song.
You certainly know the song.
I'm like,
yuckity yuck.
Yeah, I guess.
No.
I'm literally thinking they used to send, we subscribed to Entertainment Weekly, and they used to send like as a like yearly thing, yay, you continued to subscribe. They'd send like little Time Warner Classics CDs of like these were important songs in 1961 kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I'm trying to think of if we
this
had
was definitely
that
on those
for the late 50s, and I'm struggling. Sean, break it down for me.
Tequila.
If,
ooh, good guess.
You know, I used to love going to the bar Howlers, and it didn't bother me, but a lot of people had a problem there because if you were sitting, no matter what
you're
was
smoking.
Going on, what would
smoke
happen?
Smoke gets in your eyes.
What smoke would get in your eyes.
I don't know that one.
That was nice job, Sean.
Yeah.
Very well done.
I'll
right.
lead you to it.
Wow.
Smoke gets in your eyes. Does anyone know who did that one?
No.
Platters?
It's the Platters.
Yes.
Great job. It's very nice.
Don't know
it's a very nice ballad.
Also, will always make me think about 45 Years starring Charlotte Rampling, which is a movie I think about way too often.
Did she get nominated or did she nearly get nominated?
She got nominated, which is why I've seen it. And her husband of 45 years is one true love is found in preserved condition inside of a glacier. It's the plot of that movie. It's a very serious movie about a popsicle corpse.
I thought you were speaking in real life. Yes.
I think we know that. I think even if it's a minor actress, you'd be like, yeah, that actress whose husband was in the glacier.
That's the glacier widow.
It's the husband's old fiance.
That's the glacier widow.
I've seen that movie and I forgot that that's what it's about, which is how could I do that? How could you?
I don't know. I've thought about it like once a week for the last 6 years.
I will never forget.
8 years? Mm-hmm. 8 years, yeah. Number one.